Welcome back to the Up North Podcast. I'm Kristen Bry.
And I'm Kirk Bankstad.
I'm Pat Kreitlow, and our guest this week is Heather Dubois-Bournon, Executive Director of the Wisconsin Public Education Network, a statewide coalition of advocates, educators, and community supporters of students in strong public schools. She's an educator turned advocate and a parent of two kids in the Sun Prairie school system. Now, the state budget is the latest round of a political shell game that is, you know, sadly, parts of it are new in terms of we've never really quite done this with a surplus before, but it's old in that, you know, they've been playing games with public school budgets for quite some time. And so we want to get into a bit of the setup of where we are now with a state budget that the Assembly will pass next Tuesday, the Senate will pass next Wednesday, and then Governor Evers will have to decide whether to, you know, line item veto this, that, or the other thing, or maybe the whole thing. So Heather, welcome. Thank you for joining us here.
Well, thanks for having me and for shining a spotlight on this super critical issue that matters to every kid in the state.
I really do want to get at some point into what's unique about this surplus and the wasted opportunities that are happening right now in the legislature. But we should really kind of go back a step here to the start of this budget cycle, because it always starts with a governor proposing something, and then who's ever running the legislature, you know, counters. So what was the setup what was Governor Evers hoping to do versus what was being planned by the legislature before we got word of a surplus?
You know, we came into this budget cycle feeling pretty good, because the budget that Governor Evers put on the table was one that kind of came directly out of a bipartisan commission that was formed a couple of years ago called the Blue Ribbon Commission on School Funding. I don't know how many people remember that, but these folks went all around the state listening to what people had to say about the concerns about schools, put all these ideas on the table, and then the governor really translated a lot of those things into a budget that would have gone a really long way in closing some of the major gaps facing our kids and addressing some of the glaring and frankly unacceptable inequities that we continued to perpetuate as a state. So the budget on the table was excellent, and it didn't go far enough, but it went pretty far in starting to close some of these. It did things like raise funding for English language learners for the first time in 10 years. It helped to put us back on a track toward reimbursing fairly for special education, which we haven't done for decades. It started to close some gaps for mental health aides that are desperately needed across the state, and lots of other good things. That budget is now in the garbage, and the Joint Finance Committee sliced it by about 90%.
There's
like 10% of the things that the governor had proposed are mm-hmm. still on the table. But the shell game here is that even what they've offered, you know, which they're touting as two-thirds funding, is meaningless to schools because it doesn't come with what's called a revenue limit increase. Now, this is the confusing part, and I know people are going to get bored when I start talking about it, so just hold on. Revenue limits means the state controls how much your district is allowed to spend. So
I'll interrupt you from time to time. The party of local control has put controls on local school boards as to what they can raise to educate their children.
Exactly. And that's why we have to go to referenda, because if we want to spend more, we have to vote to make that decision at the local mm-hmm. level. But usually, and we call this the Tommy Thompson standard, usually we would give schools an inflationary increase at the minimum so that at least they can raise spending enough to meet up with inflation and to meet rising. Revenue limits by $0, which means zero new dollars get to kids, which means zero new dollars get to classrooms. And so even though the state is paying a larger share, it basically just comes back to us in the form of a local property tax cut. So if you really want to see more aid get to kids, you're going to have to go vote at the ballot box next April and raise taxes on yourself to do it.
So we were trying to come up with the right analogy to describe this. And in the case of, you know, a glass of water being what, you know, school funding would be, If you could do it with, like, you know, oil and water or two different color liquids, you're reducing one of the, you're raising the amount of one liquid in there, but you're reducing the amount of the other, and the amount of money really isn't changing very much. But that takes us now to the surplus, where, again, because of revenue caps, think of that surplus as a big bucket of water where some of it could go into that glass for public education, but the revenue caps, if they go untouched, are like putting a coaster over the top of the glass, and all that revenue goes other places, like to tax cuts to some of the wealthiest households and things like that. Right, Heather?
That's exactly right. And I'll tell you what, the kids don't care. The kids don't care who poured how much water into that glass. They care whether or not they're still thirsty. And our kids are still thirsty. This is something that we've known for years and years. And we're the budget that was on the table from the governor was being touted as sort of, you know, this Democrat wish list, one politician called it, or, you know, an unreasonable request. It was for the basics. It was for things that would keep doors open and make sure that we were really meeting the minimum needs of kids across our districts and start closing some of those gaps between have and have nots that our messed up funding formula has caused across the state for the past, you know, 30 plus years. And I'll tell you what, if we don't start closing these gaps now, when we're in this once in a lifetime situation where we actually have the money to do it, when will we? I mean, how long are we willing to stay at the bottom in all these categories, Wisconsin? We are worst in the nation for racial disparities between Black and white students. We are worst in the nation in how we fund special education for among states who fund like we do. We are worst in the nation for English language learner reimbursements. All of these categories are areas that the state Supreme Court has identified as places we really need to do more work. That and helping students in poverty. And it's just places we're making the gaps wider. Why wouldn't we take an advantage of this opportunity to close them? That's the question that people are asking all over the state. And that's right. Why they've been out in the streets all week trying to, you know, ring this bell before the legislature votes on this.
Mm-hmm. So, I know you can't get into the heads of the people who are making, who this is the way that they're voting or bills they're proposing. But I just don't understand what the end game is. Is the end game to have every child go to a charter school and private school and just to abolish public school? Is that their ideal situation? Like, that's what I don't understand is by starving or like just continuing to pull money to not fund something that goes to everyone's constituency. Like, I just don't understand the rationale.
You know, that's a great question, Kristen. And again, you're right. I don't see into the hearts and minds of all our lawmakers, and I don't know, and I would hope that that's not what all of them really want. But we know what the end game is for the privatization movement, a voucher in every backpack, right? They've made this claim clear for many, many years. There's an article that's almost 50 years old now by Milton Friedman, public schools, make them private. The privatization agenda and this idea that if we, you know, kind of slowly shift our resources away from the public sphere and into private hands, it's going to improve outcomes for kids has not only been debunked by the practice that we've seen in this state and many others, but by the fact that it's just costing us more and more and more and making the cost of educating so many more kids unsustainable for the state. And who pays the price? Our most vulnerable students. Students in poverty, students in the largest districts with the most expensive, and so on. It's simply unconscionable, and we've got to do something about it. That's kind of why our network got started, and we're trying to, you know, just find ways to remove the politics from this conversation so that we can just talk about what does all this mean for kids. We're a nonpartisan group, and so even though this is a hyper-partisan issue, we always say that politics is our problem, not our fault. We need to find solutions. There's a rainbow on our horizon right now in the form of a $6 billion surplus that would go so far to resolving these issues for kids. Please, please let our children partake in the pot of gold and do not dump it in the trash.
I hear you, Heather. You came in and said Governor Evers proposed in his budget something that would kind of get us back to some level of normalcy. Can we take it back to, you know, I grew up in Wisconsin. I grew up in Stevens Point, and I grew up in a wonderful public education system. Stevens Point Area Senior High, I felt like I was given every, you know, spash. I felt like I was given every opportunity ever. I mean, we had really high level math classes. We had advanced placement classes. We had lots of music courses. I was like, this is pretty awesome. When did this change? I mean, I left Wisconsin for a while and on lived on either coast and came back. So I wasn't here, but can you kind of tell us how we became last in a lot of things from being probably first or top 10 for a while? Can you give us some of the history of why we're so broken already before this budget even came to pass?
Well, first I want to say public schools all over the state are still doing great things. And they're still connecting with kids and they're still providing a world-class education through the cracks and despite all of this, because our educators are amazing and have been forced of necessity to always find a way to do it. And so I think that's part of the challenge, is that people love their local public schools and they see ways that they are meeting kids' needs and think, oh, you can do it with less and less and less and less, and also less and less and less and less. And so I would say it all started back in 1994, 95, when we put that squeeze on the revenue limits and started limiting how much districts could spend. That's when the inequities really started to get cemented across the state, because it was so arbitrary and so weird, and because our funding formula aligns to property value, not student need. And so it was doomed from the start. But then some of you might recall the year 2011, we had a brand new governor. Decimated our schools with the biggest cut at the time that had ever been seen in any public school system in the nation. You know, over $2 billion in cuts that year, plus pulling back collective bargaining for students. I mean, that's when I got into this fight, because I was like, whoa, 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 this is, you know what this is going to mean in my district? Like, we're already struggling to like meet some of the basics. Like, this is not okay.
This reminds me of, you know, one of the first big stories for Up North News when we signed on early last year was putting out reporting on a study that was done that found that if, instead of Act 10 and everything else, if school spending had just stayed at 2011 levels, yeah, not adjusted for inflation, just stayed at 2011 levels, schools would have had $4 billion more over the past 10 years. You wouldn't have to raise taxes or anything. So that's $4 billion that schools lost out amongst so many other things. I want to get to one specific.
That's where we are right now.
Yep. I want to get to one specific part, because there's so many other different ways to break this down, but I think one is especially heartbreaking, and that's special education. Look, you can debate whether we should have two-thirds funding, you know, more or less than two-thirds funding, but special education is one that is woefully underfunded. And again, there was no opportunity given to fix that in this budget, was there?
Oh, there was opportunity, all right.
Well, I mean the opportunity wasn't taken. Yeah,
the governor proposed raising the special education reimbursement to 60%.
Because right now it's what?
By the second. Right now it's about
27%.
Yeah. I mean, I haven't seen the numbers shake down. They always do that at the very end of the year. Right, but it was supposed to be to 30, but because they didn't make it some certain, it didn't reach that mark, which they've done again. So they have ticked it up just the tiniest bit. But the fact is, in the year 1985, we funded 100%. For a good long stretch, we funded at 60%. For a while, we were funding at over 80%. And right now, we're funding, you know, less than 30 cents on the dollar for our public school kids reimbursement for special education. This is a $1 billion a year annual funding gap that districts have to take out of their general operating funds, money that would go to programs, to teachers, staff, to fixing buildings, whatever they need to do. And they're frittering it away. Meanwhile, you want to know how much we fund reimbursement for students who need special education services who are on a voucher, that's right, over 100%. By state statute, it's 90%, but it works out well over that by the time we shake everything down.
It's
a gross double standard and absolutely unacceptable.
It sure works great. Yeah, if you're on one side of the ledger here. Heather Dubois-Bornon from the Wisconsin Public Education Network, we really appreciate you helping shine a light on what's going on with the budget. We know it's a big, tough fight, but we wish you all the best with it.
Well, I thank you so much. And I invite everybody to go to wisconsinnetwork.org and find out how you can raise your voice if you're mad about anything I said. And I sure hope you are.
All right. Thank you, Heather. We'll be back in just a bit. You're up north.